Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Jalles Machado's conference call to discuss the results of the fourth quarter and the 2020-2021 crop year. This conference is being recorded, and the audio will be available at the company's website at ri.jallesmachado.com. At the end of the presentation, all participants will be able to participate in the Q&A session when further instructions will be given. Should you need assistance during the call, please press star zero. The earnings release and the presentation on the fourth quarter and the crop year of 2020-2021 can be accessed on the company's RI website. Before proceeding, I would like to mention that any statements that may be made during this conference call related to the company's business prospects, forecasts, operating and financial targets related to its growth potential are based on the company's management's expectations about the future of Jalles Machado. Such expectations are highly dependent on domestic and foreign market conditions, as well as national and international economic scenarios, and therefore are subject to change. Today with us are conducting the conference are Mr. Otávio Lage de Siqueira Filho, CEO, and Mr. Rodrigo Penna, CFO. Now, I would like to turn the floor over to Mr. Otávio. You may proceed, sir.
Good afternoon, everybody. First of all, I would like to thank God for giving us the opportunity to be here together. And I would also like to thank the participants, investors, shareholders, analysts who are friends of ours, and that have been with us throughout this journey of 40 years. I would also like to thank Rodrigo, Fred, who have always been working with investor relations so that we have transparency in our communications. And I would also like to thank our entire team, our employees, who are our biggest assets. Last year, we celebrated our 40th anniversary, and that period was filled with successes and victories. It is a privilege to be around for such a long time. Many of us have been here since the very beginning, and we have been obtaining great results because of the wonderful team that we have that really believe in our company. And this year was a very good year with great results, record-breaking crops with low costs, and we had many victories. The prices in the market helped us, and in our pursuit for lower costs and increased opportunities, we also had a great agricultural yield, which motivates us. We believe that our performance relies on what we do in the field. The agribusiness and the industrial businesses need to have good operations so that we can have good results in the company. That's what we believe in. We finished the year with a successful IPO, and we are focused on everything that we promised in terms of the brownfield operations and new acquisitions. That's what we are focusing on. We are working extremely hard to deliver on those promises that we made in the IPO. And we are going to give you some more details during the presentation about our results, the investments, the very good investments that we made in irrigation, for example. The region where we are present benefits a great deal from irrigation. And we are also reducing costs, which has been helping us. So I believe that those are the main points that I would like to highlight. And we actually won the Great Place to Work award here in the Brazilian agribusiness. We are among the top 10 companies to work for in the agribusiness sector here in Brazil, which shows that our employees understand that we try to create the good environment that enables great results. And this is all on my side. I would like to turn it over to Rodrigo now, who will show the numbers. And once again, thank you very much for your participation. And now, Rodrigo, floor is yours.
Hello, good afternoon, everybody. Once again, thank you very much for participating in our conference. Once again, this is the first annual earnings conference call after going public. I would like to thank you all for trusting us when you invested in our shares and for believing in Jalles Machado's 40-plus year expertise. And we are going to continue working extremely hard to add value, delivering value to our shareholders, the old shareholders and the new ones who believed in us. And once again, thank you very much to our RI team, the controllership team, financial team supporting us. And so with that, let's start the presentation. We have a summary here of our results for the crop year 2021. It was a record-breaking crop year. It was the largest crop that you had, the one that ended in 2021. And we released a material fact some weeks ago. I'm going to talk to you about that material fact later on in the presentation. But before that, let's start here on page 3 of the presentation that you probably have. We finished the year with 5.3 million tons, with 3.39 with Jalles Machado and 2.266 in the Otávio Lage unit. Now, in terms of yield, we had roughly the same yield that we had in the previous crop year. The Otávio Lage unit reached a third-digit yield with 101 tons per hectare, and Jalles Machado stood at 92 tons per hectare. Great yield, great productivity in comparison with the average for the country, which is about 75 tons per hectare. The mix was leaning more towards sugar, the sugar products, with a better profitability with ethanol. And sugar accounted for 47%. Now, in terms of TRS, we had a slight drop. We had 138 in comparison with 143 in the previous crop year. And that happened because of rainfall. It increased in April. We had a very intense rainfall in April, and we started the crop with a lower TRS. Now, our average age is standing at 3.3 years, roughly in line with the previous crop year. Now, in terms of production, even though we had 3.6 more sugarcane since TRS was lower, we had a TRS in line with the previous crop year with 0.4% less. And in ethanol, we had a production that dropped by 36%, and sugar went up by 54%. So that's why we had larger sugar production. And we also would like to highlight sanitizers with an increase of 76% to meet the pandemic's demand. Now, in terms of sales volume, we sowed more this season than the previous season, where we had a larger inventory, but the inventory was roughly in line with the previous crop year. And now on slide 6, let's talk about prices.
We're talking about sales volume on slide 6 for those who have just joined the conference. Our prices were way above. You can see the behavior of the prices along the years. On the right-hand side, you can see the prices for sugar. We spent the entire crop year selling sugar at a higher price than the previous crop year. And for ethanol, in the beginning, we were hit by the pandemic and we saw a very sharp drop in the price of ethanol. We were selling at 1.8 or even below that, and then we started rebounding. And in August, we actually exceeded the amount that we had in the previous year. And in the last quarter, we can see the bars on the chart showing the evolution of the prices. You can see that the blue bars show the volumes sold of ethanol in 2021. You can see that in the beginning of the crop year, we were a bit concerned about the pandemic, and we were not able to create a full stock for ethanol, and we almost didn't sell anything for ethanol. And then in December through March, we sold a large volume of ethanol at very good prices in the off-season, which was a very good strategy that we decided to adopt. Now, I would like to talk about our financial highlights on slide 8. I just want you to give an overview of what the crop year was like. Since we are going to talk in more details about each item in the next slides, I'm just going to give you a brief overview. And then I'll move over the next slides that will show the details of each item in our financial highlights. So, gross revenue, we had 1,275 million in comparison with 1,087 million in the last crop year. And we had almost 41 reals per ton of sugarcane, which is a very strong price, especially for sugar, which rebounded from the last crop year. So 241 reals per ton of sugarcane. And the change in our gross revenue was a positive 17%. And the price per ton increased from 208 reals. I'm sorry, 213 to 241. So, in terms of revenue per ton per unit, we had a 13% increase. And total earnings, total gross revenue went up by 17%. Now, sugar, all types of sugar together accounted for over 50% of the total revenues of the company. We just showed you that mix for sugar was 47, but in relation to revenue, it was 52%. Even if we take into account the sanitizers as ethanol, and that happens because of the value added that we find in organic sugar, which accounted for 21% of our gross revenues. Sanitizers accounted for more than it was in the previous crop year, which was 6 to 7%, and it is now 10%. The domestic market accounted for 73% of our revenues, and the foreign market accounted for 27%. Our COGS were 123.8 reals per ton, 655 million. So, if we look at our evolution, the net revenue increased by 22% and COGS grew by 13%. So, you can see that our margins increased. The gross profit and the gross margins have both increased because revenues went up more than the costs. Now, SG&A. It went up to 176 million with 33.3%
reals per ton. And here we have higher costs to export organic sugar, both in terms of freight and sales as well. And the volume was actually larger. So if you put up all that together, the higher FX and higher volumes, that has an impact on our SG&A going from 27 to 33 tons. Now, our EBITDA, we were at 710 million with a margin of 65.4%. And lastly, our net income was 170 million in comparison with 76 in the previous crop year with a 16% margin. Our net income increased from one year to the next, as you can see here. We moved from 76 to 170 million, a 123% growth year-on-year with 16% margins. It is important to highlight on, still on slide 10, it is important to highlight that our net income was higher, our financial result was also higher with a 60% increase, with a net financial result of 306 million in comparison with 188. And that is mainly related to our hedge policy. We hedged our 2021 crop year, and we also have hedges for the next crop years. So that was the main impact that we had here in financial expenses, non-cash financial expenses. Today, we don't have a hedge account, so we can see that impact because the future prices are higher than the prices that we fixed for sugar. Now, moving on to slide 11. We have other operating incomes, especially from tax discounts, tax incentives that we have in the state of Goiás due to inventories. And our operating income was 85 with an 18% decrease because we had a large portion of sugar this crop year. So when we have more sugar, we have discounts in the ICMS tax in relation to the nominal rate. So the larger the rate, the larger the discount. And that's why other operating incomes dropped because we had more sugar this crop year. And the tax for sugar is lower than for ethanol. Our cash earnings amounted to 207 million. Now, what are the additions and exclusions that we have here? We have adjustments of biological assets, which are non-cash. We have IFRS 16 effects. We have also allowance for doubtful accounts, MTM, and XR variations. So those are the four additions slash exclusions that we had here in our cash earnings. And the result was 207 million, 46% higher than the previous crop year. Now the company's EBIT, and I'm going to talk about the adjusted EBIT with 331 million against 270 four with a 21% increase, and adjusted EBITDA was 710 in comparison with 610, a 16% increase. Now we also have here our ROIC, and our result was 14% in comparison with 17% in the previous crop year. We had a lower ROIC because in the past 2 months, we increased our shareholders' equity and we also had the IPO, and that had an impact on our ROIC, but still we posted a larger result, a better result than the market's peers. Now, inventories, we finished the period, And I'm talking about slide 12, okay, for those who have just joined us. I'm talking about inventories on slide 12. And we were a little bit below our previous crop year in the finished goods, but in the warehouse goods, we were above. For example, here in the total number, you can see that we closed the year at 76 in comparison with 70. And what happened here is that during the pandemic, as you saw in the news, all sectors were struggling in terms of supplies and inputs. But in our strategy to mitigate risks, we decided to have strategic inventories, larger inventories for those strategic products. And by doing that, we were able to increase our inventories, and we had some increases in unit prices for some materials. Now, moving on to slide 13, we started to segregate MTA by crop. So you can see here the breakdown of our MTM by crop. This, and I'm talking about our non-cash MTM. So our MTM today is at 98 million, and that is related to the 21-22 crop year. That's a negative 98, and we have a positive MTM at 11.5 in the 23-24 crop year, amounting to 136 million of MTM distributed across those crops. In March 21, we were at 96% of the crop in a fixed volume at the average price of 1,491. And for 22-23, 97% of the crop is fixed. We have already started with 23-24. In March 21, we had already fixed 17% of that crop year at the price of 1900 with a positive MTM. And one important point that we have here, and we actually added the percentage of fixed TRS, and we added that column because the only product that we can hedge today is conventional sugar. And it accounts for only 34% of the total TRS of the company. And sometimes it's even less than that in terms of the revenues of the company. So only 34% of the total TRS is fixed because the rest is organic sugar or ethanol. So there are still many products that are marked to the market. So we are taking advantage of the good prices that we have, and we are making more progress in terms of fixed prices. As we said earlier, we have annual contracts for organic products, and they are bilateral contracts. They are annual bilateral contract. So this is what our hedge policy is like today. This is what we have executed so far. Now, in terms of exposure in foreign currency, for the past 2 years now, we have worked with a zero exposure. We had less than $10 million. And in the short term, we had actually more assets in dollars, with 7.5 million in assets in dollars. Now, in the bars, you can see the assets and the liabilities, and in the line, you can see the accumulated exposure. So it accumulates across crop years. As a policy, in the short term, we never have any exposure. And in the long term, we have more exposure as defined by our board. And we have been working a little bit below that because it doesn't really make sense right now to be short on dollar because the
Brazilian interest rates have been very low. Now, moving on to slide 14, we have some details about our CapEx. We closed the year at 249, in line with the previous year. And here you can see the breakdown of each component of our CapEx, for example, biological and renewal, planting, expansion planting, and fixed assets or property, plants, and equipment. Now, on slide 15, I'd like to talk about our cash and debt. We closed the year with a cash at 1.2 billion, which is a record-breaking amount for us. We already had cash reserves because of the pandemic. We were a bit concerned about that, so we strengthened our cash. And then after the IPO, we had the IPO proceeds with 520 million. Those are the net proceeds. We had 32 million in the issuance cost, so net of that, we had 520 million to strengthen our cash so that we are able to deliver on the brownfield and M&A operations that we provided for in our prospect. Now, in terms of debt, we finished the year at 198 million, and our leverage was 0.3 times, which is the lowest level that we have ever had. 30% of our debt is short term, 70 long term. And in the last chart on this slide, you can see the maturities over the next years. And we also had a CRA bond issuance in the previous crop year, maturing in 2024-25. So you can see that maturity dates are well distributed across the next crop years. 19% of our debts are in dollars. And as you said, we are very well protected. We have a good hedge. We don't have exposure to dollars. And you can see the breakdown of our debts by institution. In 2021-22, we had a CRA bond, and we have already settled 50% of that. So just to give you some more examples and to give you more clarification of why we had that breakdown of debt being 30% in the short term, that happened because we had 50% of the CRA bonds maturing now. Part matured in April, and part of that will mature in June. And now on slide 17, you can see the evolution of our debt over the year. We started March 2020 with 850 million in debts. We had a cash cost of 376, a CapEx of 461. The debt servicing costs amounted to 111, and a foreign exchange change of 24 million. We had net revenues of 1.08 billion. The others account for our working capital from one crop year to the next. So we finished the year with 718, excluding the IPO proceeds. And this is very important. We had a deleverage of 132 million, although we had an FX variation. Our debt decreased in nominal terms by 132 million, even before the IPO. And after the IPO, it reduced even further. There was a 520 million reduction, and that left us 198. And here I would like to update you on our guidance that we disclosed to the market in a material fact. We are not going to have any
disruption this year. Our guidance is between 5,260 and 5,400, with an average TRS of 134 and 142 tons. And our mix, we are going to have a larger sugar portion for the next year from 48 to 51%. So this is our guidance. We didn't have any rainfall problems affecting our guidance this year, affecting our crop year. And that's why the company is going through a moment that's very different from the rest of the country. We are going to have a crop year that is in line with the previous crop year in terms of yield with a larger TRS. So we are going to have a larger volume of products this year than we had in the previous crop year. So with that, I finished the presentation. Thank you very much for your attention and patience. And now we are going to start the Q&A session. Please feel free to any questions you might have. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to start now the Q&A session. To ask a question, please press star one. To remove your question from the queue, please press star two. The first question comes from Rodrigo Almeida with Santander. Please, Mr. Rodrigo, you may proceed.
Hello. Good afternoon. I have two questions. The first of all is about M&A. Could you please share with us what the latest progress has been like? I believe that in our latest talk, you talked about some NDAs that were signed. And I would also like to know if there was any change in the perception of values of prices. Prices for sugar went up, and there were some structural changes in the global market. So I would like to know more about the value perception of those assets. And the second question is about organic growth. I would like to know more about CapEx. Your CapEx, I would like to know what you're going to invest in terms of expanding the cluster. I would like to know if there was any change in your perspectives in terms of CapEx, especially now with the real appreciating in relation to the dollar. Maybe there might have been a change in your perspectives about CapEx. And also about prices. I would like to know about white sugar, especially and also in relation to anhydrous ethanol in the Goiás market. Thank you very much, Rodrigo, for your participation. You asked some questions. I'll start with the first about M&A. Well, since the IPO, we have been working very hard on those two sides of our growth, brownfield and M&A. Starting with M&A, we spent some time analyzing potential targets, and some other targets emerged. Some targets we already knew at the time of the IPO, and some we simply dropped, and now we have some targets that we are taking a closer look at. The price levels continue the same. Of course, each asset has their own characteristics. We have to take into account the return to shareholders. Some assets will be faster in terms of providing returns, some will be slower, and that drives prices up or down. And in the past, the targets were not very liquid. The sector has assets that the owners wanted to sell. So I believe that we are just looking at those targets with the same price levels that we had before. And of course, we always want to look at the returns that we have to provide to shareholders. We have to be very careful in terms of analyzing those assets from that perspective. We have to look at the agricultural side of those assets and how they are growing. We also have to analyze the cost of maintaining that growth over time. There are some targets that are in a very good shape. And at the end of the day, in terms of dollars per ton, there might be some differences between them, but we always have to be very careful about looking at the returns to shareholders. Now, when it comes to timing, we still intend to finish an M&A still in this crop year, 21-22. So until March 2022, we believe that we will be able to have completed that M&A operation. Of course, being very careful always. Now, about brownfield opportunities, we analyzed some scenarios over the past months to find the best expansion model in terms of returns, maybe in the two units or only one of them. And we also analyzed the mix. So we ran a number of different analyses. They're practically finished. We are now just fine-tuning them so that we decide how the growth will take place. And probably part of that will happen in one mill and part in the other. Most growth will come from Otávio Lage unit and the smaller part in Lages Machado, bringing the maximum ITR possible. After the IPO, we saw increases in material costs. And now the FX has returned to its previous levels. So things are more like what we said in the IPO. I believe that we maintained our growth plan with 350 million for the 1 million ton brownfield. And that continues to be our guidance. It hasn't changed. We're going to have that volume of investment for this part of the expansion of 1 million tons. And lastly, Rodrigo, about the domestic market and sugar and ethanol in the domestic market. Well, we believed that we would maximize sugar as much as possible. And you can see that our guidance looks exactly like that, with a maximum amount of sugar. But, and I'm talking about public information about the market and not really the company, in some moments in the month of May and early June, we saw better prices at ethanol than sugar, VHP sugar and domestic sugar. So at some point, we gave ethanol a higher priority, which is something that we didn't think we would do in this year. The market is now offering better prices for ethanol. Just so you have an idea, the market in the state of Goiás for ethanol, the gross price went from 330 and 370 or 375. That was the market price for ethanol. We have not disclosed the numbers for the first quarter. They are going to be disclosed in August, but that was what the market was like. So it was very strong, but then sugar rebounded. So we believe that the scenario will continue to lean more towards sugar, with the exception of that period in which ethanol had better prices than sugar. Now, what are things like today? Well, in the market of São Paulo, which is the largest one, VHP
has lower prices than ethanol, but the domestic market sugar is better than ethanol for the market as a whole. For the other regions, have I answered your question, all of your questions, Rodrigo? Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much. It is a great pleasure to talk to you again, and congratulations on the great results. No, thank you, Rodrigo, for the participation, and our team is at your full disposal. Fred, myself, if you need any additional information, please feel free to contact us. The next question comes from Thiago Duarte with BTG Pactual. Please, Mr. Thiago Duarte, you may proceed.
Hello, good afternoon, Rodrigo and Otávio. Good afternoon, everybody. I have a follow-up question about the organic sugar market. I believe that in our past talks, including during the IPO roadshow, you said that you would be able to close other contracts for organic sugar at dollar prices that are in line with the previous crop year. So my question is that still the same now that we are June, we have more visibility? And also, does that remain the same for that level of volume, 80, 85 tons that you sold in terms of organic sugar in the previous crop year? And my second question is a follow-up question about organic expansion, the brownfield expansion. When we look at the implicit crushing volumes and TCH in your guidance, are those numbers including area expansions, implicit expansions? To me, it doesn't look like that. So my question is, does it make sense to assume that there is no expansion in terms of area associated with the guidance ranges that you gave us? Am I correct to assume that? Hello, Thiago. That's a very good question. About organic sugar, yes, we still have the same vision that we had during the roadshow in terms of price stability for organic sugar and in dollars. As we said, organic sugar has a lower volatility attached to it. The prices are different. And prices remain the same. We have advanced contracts, many have been signed. Some are at the final stages of negotiation, and we have a price stability in comparison with last year. Now, in terms of volumes for organic sugar this year, we want to increase that forecast of 8% in comparison with the previous crop year. So we are going to grow in comparison with the last crop year at stable prices. Now, your second question was about area expansion, brownfield expansion. Just to recap our expansion project, as we mentioned in the IPO, the 1 million tons would come from a vertical expansion. Just to recap for those who have not followed our company, we are going to deliver 1 million tons, and 200,000 will come from gain in yields, and 800,000 will come from horizontal expansions. The field that we should have planted this year, we should have bought them last year so that we could start planting starting in February this year. We had 800 hectares in expansion last year, and to deliver the 800,000 tons
from expanded lands, we would need 8,000 hectares. And those 8,000 hectares, well, 800 we already have and we are already planting. And that's how much we are going to have in excess next year. So our crushing volume growth will come from those hectares with 5.5 million tons. Now, out of the 8,000 hectares of horizontal expansion, we are already planting part of that. And this year we are going to plant 3,600 hectares. We are going to buy 3,600 hectares to plant next year. And the same thing next year to plant in 23. So when we plant in 2022, we are going to harvest in 23. And that's how much we are going to crush in 24. So we are going to have over 5 million tons in 23 and 24. And we are also investing in irrigation for the next 3 to 4 years. We're going to continue investing in improvement in terms of management and varietals as well. So we are going to increase our yields in 200,000 tons gradually by 23, 24. So we are going to conclude the 1 million tons in 23, 24. In 23, we are already going to have a very large volume, crushed volume, and we will have the final 1 million by 24. Out of the 3,600 hectares, we have already contracts for most part of the area, and we have even a larger volume in negotiation, much larger than 3,600 hectares. So we don't see any difficulties despite the competitiveness in terms of grains, which increased. But here in our region, we don't have crops and double crops as we have in other regions. Grains are very competitive because we have crops and double crops, but not in our region. So we don't have so many difficulties in terms of working and competing for land with grain farmers. I don't know. Do you have any other questions? Have I answered your questions? Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Tiago. Thank you very much for participating in our conference call and following our updates. And thank you very much for your great work following our company. The next question comes from Gustavo Guimarães with Brazil Capital. Please, Mr. Guimarães, you may proceed.
Hello, everybody, Rodrigo and the team. I have three questions. I would like to know your perspective about supply and demand for sugar. I know things have changed since the IPO. And I would like to know, and my second question is, how has the perception change impact the long-term organic sugar prices? Do you think the prices will remain stable? And the third question is, what can you still do in terms of cutting back costs and gaining more efficiency? Thank you.
Good afternoon, Gustavo. Thank you very much for your participation. Well, the first question, can you repeat the first question, please? I took notes of the last two, but not the first one. I'd like to know more about the supply and demand for sugar with India
and all that. Well, since the IPO, the market had good news, favorable news in terms of sugar. The ethanol market increased prices more than we imagined. We had firm prices for oil, and India made the decision of advancing the mix of ethanol into gasoline. So the crop year for sugar will finish in September. That will be the 2021 crop year. It is a different crop year. And then 21-22 crop year will start finishing in September 22. So what we hear from the sector, from the market, is that we are going to have a slight deficit. And of course, with the scenario here in Brazil with the crop disruption, so the balance between supply and demand will continue to be balanced. And since inventories are low, we might have a longer period with prices at that level, a longer period than we had imagined earlier. And we also have competitive farmers or producing countries. The first one is Brazil, but we also have Thailand and India. Sometimes they increase exports, sometimes they decrease exports. It's very volatile. So there's India and Thailand. And for Thailand, their break-even is 17 cents. And for India, the export prices that are worth for them is 19 cents and to the pound. And we have a large volume. Thailand tends to improve. They had a large disruption. The volume tends to increase, but the consumption is also increasing there. And here in Brazil, with the replacement costs that we have now, we have to keep a higher price to encourage new investments so that we can expand our capacity. We have been at the level of 600 million tons in the mid-southern region, and we don't have any more incentives. People are very excited about greenfield operations and increasing the number of mills, but that process has not started yet. And if it starts now, we are going to reap the benefits in 3 years' time. So the trend is really for the market to have a balance in terms of supply and demand, and prices will remain flat for a while. Now, in terms of reducing costs, well, we always say here at the company that costs are like nails. You have to trim them constantly. That is a continuous process, really. What we have been doing to become increasingly efficient is paying close attention to innovation, automation. In the IPO, we showed you our control tower, which is integrated to the agricultural and industrial side of the business. We are adding new equipment and new processes to our tower to control costs and reduce costs and get more efficiency out of our machinery. So we have been trying to gain more from that. We have some robot initiatives. We are trying to automate some administrative functions to pursue more efficiencies, improving our processes, having more technology in place, and paying close attention to innovation because there is a major window for opportunities in the agriculture 4.0. We know that in the very near future, we are going to see autonomous operation in the field. So it's about improving continuously, paying close attention continuously to our costs, focusing on innovation, improvements, reducing costs. So that's really part of our everyday activities.
Thank you very much, Gustavo, for your participation. Now, the next question comes from webcast with Alexander Faber Silva. Mr. Silva asks, what are the growth plans that you have, and what are the risks that may hinder those plans? I'm sorry, can you repeat that? The sound broke. Okay, the question was, what are the growth plans that you have, and what are the risks that may come in the way of those plans?
Well, the growth plan that we have for the company and that we are focusing on, besides the qualitative improvements that we always pursue, are about growing by 1 million tons in the existing units, as we just explained. It's just about summarizing Duarte's question. We are going to grow by 1 million tons by 2024. We are going to grow especially more in the 23-24 crop year. And we also have the M&A plan to grow 2 million tons. That's our target in terms of M&A growth. We are going to move to a new region, and since here in our existing region, we would run out of land for expansion. We would have marginal expansions, but not a large one. We wouldn't be able to do that because of shortage of land. So we are going to move to another region through an M&A operation so that we can also mitigate weather risks and market risks. We want to diversify our land base by moving to a different region. So that's our growth plan. And now the risks. Well, we have execution risks that are very little in terms of our brownfield expansion. Our growth average from the first crop year is almost 4% per year. That's our compound CAGR. So we're going to grow a little bit short of 20% in the brownfield operations. Now, for M&As, the execution risks are about finding a good asset, a good target, and we have already identified some good targets. We are analyzing, discussing them, and then execution, executing the M&A deal successfully and bringing operation standards and management standards that we have at Jalles Machado, taking those standards to the new unit. And that's why we are very disciplined, very diligent in terms of minimizing those risks. And Jalles Machado, as you know, has been around for 40 years. We work 100% with our own sugarcane. We plant sugarcane. We conduct the entire operation of the crops. We dominate the agricultural side and the industrial side of the business, and that takes risks to a minimum. We are also very diligent about environmental aspects, tax, industrial aspects. You are familiar with all different aspects, and we have to take care of each one of them so we have as least risk as possible.
But in summary, we are very comfortable about our capacity to execute both strategies, brownfield and also M&A opportunities. The high management of the company has been dedicating a lot of time and focus on those two aspects. Mr. Alexander Silva continued saying, "Is there a dividend payment program in place?" Yes, that's a good question, Alexander. There is a dividend program. We have a dividend policy. And that policy sets out that we have to distribute at least 25%. And when we reach a leverage level that is less than 2x our EBIT, that means a very low leverage, then the minimum dividend amount is 40% of the results. Unless there is a growth plan, an expansion plan in our projects. For example, now after the IPO, we are very deleveraged. We are below that level, but we have our commitments. We have commitments in terms of growth, brownfield growth, and M&A growth. So we are going to distribute 25% as disclosed in our material facts. We're going to distribute 25% of the results this year. But the policy, the dividend policy, provides that if we are deleveraged, that percentage can be increased to up to 40%. That policy was approved by the company's board. It was actually approved in late 2020. Thank you. If there are no more questions, I would like to turn the floor over to Mr. Rodrigo for his final remarks. Please, Mr. Rodrigo, you may proceed.
Well, I would like to wrap up by thanking you once again for being here, for having such a great interest in Jalles Machado. We are very confident in our project. We have heard favorable good news in the sector. We always strive for efficiency and improvement in our operations. And I would like to thank you very much for your questions. I would like to, of course, be at your disposal and leave the doors open for you to contact us, contact our investor relations team, and also provide us feedback about what can be improved in terms of communication with all of you. And I would like to see you all again in our next call in the first quarter 21-22. We're going to finish that quarter in June, and in the first half of August, we are going to be disclosing our earnings results for the first quarter, and I hope to see you all then. I would also like to thank our team and congratulate our shareholders on the great results with record-breaking crushing volumes and yields. So thank you very much. Best regards. See you next time. That concludes Jalles Machado's conference call for today. Thank you very much for your participation and have a good day.